the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Pruitt? Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Mead?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Thank you very much. First up is audience communication. We have two people signed up. Now, this is not for the public hearing. This is just for audience communication on other matters. So, first up, Diedrich Voss. Welcome. Name and address.
Diedrich Voss, 15226 12th Drive, Southeast Mill Creek. I'm here to talk about surface water. I see on the agenda that you do have an issue on surface water tonight. I hereby request that council once again ask the city manager to establish a study group. About 6 years ago, council back then asked the city manager to set up a study group on surface water with the purpose of evaluating the viability of absorbing all private and public facilities within the city, put it all under the utility. There are a lot of cities that do that throughout the state, and they found it to be a very reasonable thing to do. Unfortunately, things were happening back then, and that study group never did happen. Now, initially, when the surface water utility was established, R.W. Beck, I believe, was the consultant on that. He did look at this condition and determined that about 17% of the budget would be needed to take care of all the private facilities if you added all the private facilities to the public that you have right now. So I'm assuming, okay, 15, 20, 22% is probably about where it is today. Assuming the city has gotten larger, you have more public facilities in it, there hasn't been that many more private facilities added to it. The reason I ask this is because right now, MCCA, which is the largest homeowner association in the city, which is about 40% of the citizens, take on city water, and you're looking to us as a private group to manage and meter out your water. Most of the water from the streets and from surrounding homeowners association, the county, private business, goes into our detention ponds. We get no compensation from you to maintain these things. So we're in a position where we're not only paying the utility, surface water utility, today it's 78, tomorrow it'll be 117, to help on all the facilities outside of MCCA. We are currently responsible for 100% of retention ponds within MCCA, which you rely on to take care of the water. So I'd like to see a study group put together this time where we can really look at this issue. This is a good time to do it. You've had a rate increase study done, and with that consultant, he could probably advise you about where it would be if you did absorb these. So thank you very much.
Barbara?
Barbara Heidel, 14144th Place, Southeast Mill Creek. To the Mill Creek Senior City Council, I've had letters distributed to you this evening. As a resident, community volunteer, and senior, I am speaking tonight to make you aware of an issue that very much concerns me, as well as many citizens in our community. I realize our budget, which you are working on now, is very tight, and there are many projects that need funding. That said, seniors are a vital part of our community and need to be considered on the budget process. We wish to be given every opportunity to help our community to thrive. In order to be successful, we need opportunities to stay physically and mentally healthy. The classes available to seniors are meant to enhance our physical and mental health and well-being by focusing on balance, exercise, and socialization. I appreciate the support the city has given to the Senior Center with yearly funds and the use of the City Hall North in the past. Since the senior center moved to our new location, there has been an issue with having a large enough space to accommodate certain physical activities previously offered, including Tai Chi and line dancing. The dancing and Tai Chi are moving to another location as of tomorrow, which is large enough but is an increase in price. We are hoping to, the increase is very temporary, so the cost will not be an inhibitor to those on a fixed income. Over the past 6 months, we have searched for solutions to our space issue. Below, on the second page, is a list of places that have been checked out. All the spaces that could work cost money to rent. We are a nonprofit organization with limited resources. Many seniors are on a fixed income, so raising the rates would only hurt them and limit how often they could afford to participate, if at all. I'm asking for an increase of $2,500 per year to help defray the cost of renting a facility to meet our needs. I do hope you will consider this request seriously. Seniors are an important part of our community. Thank you.
Anybody else who wants to talk to the council? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we're going to move on to the public hearing on the budget. Actually, this is a 2019-2020 preliminary public budget. Public hearing before
you. If you could, Mary, thank you.
So I will go ahead and open the public hearing, and you can start your presentation.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Council, and good evening. I'm pleased to present the 2019-2020 biennial budget for your consideration over the next several meetings during the months of this month and in December. This budget represents some of the most important policy and impactful decisions that you can make as a city council, and your staff has worked tirelessly to develop a budget that not only supports and promotes your guiding principles, but also is a strong commitment towards efficiency and effectiveness for local government operations, local government services, and capital investments. In the coming weeks, I look forward to your comments, to your questions, as well as for your support, as well as that from the Mill Creek community as you consider the budget. Tonight's budget is really an introduction to the 2019-2020 expenses. And of course, the initial public hearing, the budget overview, but later on in the next meeting on November 13th, we'll have a second public hearing in which we'll also discuss the preliminary budget, the city's property tax levy as appropriate or as applicable, and the surface water utility rate. We've also divided the budget up by section or by which departments will provide some detailed analysis or be able to address questions that council may have by meeting date. And so for the 13th, we've picked the Public Works and Development Services budget review, the Executive Department budget review, the Legislative Department review, and then a number of other funds, capital funds, enterprise funds, special revenue debt service, and proprietary funds. All that will be focused on for the 13th so that you can simply sort of study and look at those particular sections for the November 13th meeting. On November 27th, it'll be the third and final public hearing again. Adoption of a property tax levy as applicable or as appropriate, and as well as adoption of a surface water fee. That evening, we'll have a deep dive, if you will, into police department budget, the communication and marketing department budget, finance and administration, and then all the non-department items. And so that will finish up the review of the complete budget on the 13th. On December 14th, another discussion just overall and any remaining questions that you have from those previous two meetings or the previous three meetings, including tonight. And then we've scheduled December 4th as the adoption of the 19-20 budget with the ability to also come back on the 11th to address other questions that you would have as well as adoption on the 11th. So this budget was developed with the council's desired budget outcomes in mind. These outcomes included three revenue options. They included develop a sustainable budget that aligns with ongoing resources to ongoing expenses and one-time resources to one-time expenses, maintain the city's general fund reserves at a level equal to at least 15% of the general fund budgeted annual revenue, and that's important because you remember we changed that to the total revenue within the CIP document that then gets folded into the budget. But nonetheless, this was the policy statement that with council was adopted earlier this year. And that excludes the beginning fund balance and any significant one-time revenues. And then finally, we wanted to continue to limit the tax burden on Mill Creek citizens by seeking operating efficiencies wherever possible. The budget also included some nine key expense and service outcomes. Those include pursuing economic development programs and initiatives to create sustainable revenue streams and evaluating and implementing the following tourism activities, things that draw people into the city and create unique experiences, changes in the development code to promote and incentivize development within the city, business recruitment and retention. Another expense service outcome was to continue to construct, maintain, preserve the capital investments as prescribed within the adopted CIP, which you, of course, adopted last month. Evaluate and create recreation programs to meet the demands and support revenue recovery goals. Retain all existing parkland. Continue to grow public involvement and engagement and volunteerism. Partner with the schools and local groups and provide public safety, example of gun safety, cybersecurity, and opioid epidemic. Obtain accreditation and ensure public safety practices to protect the city from liability. And ensure police and fire are properly staffed to meet the service needs and to respond to emergent situations. Develop a citizen satisfaction index poll via web and biennial mail budget survey of city services. The city budget also, I want to review for you also now the some of the key elements associated with the 2019-2020 budget. The budget includes a number of new policies, many of which were proposed and then adopted by the City Council as part of the CIP and then, of course, were then folded into the budget, but one of which is the Recreation Fund was moved out or into the General Fund. It was its own enterprise fund previously, and for accounting purposes and for management purposes, we simply moved that back into the General Fund. The budget also reflects unwinding of several funds, most notably the removing the Equipment Replacement Fund from the CIP. We also created a new reserve policy within the city's general fund. Remember previously the policy was to create a 50% reserve of annual revenues. We've created a new policy to creating 50% of total revenues. That, of course, then has enlarged your general fund reserve, but also as part of the CIP, we also promoted and you adopted that we transfer 33% or a third of that reserve into the capital improvement plan for investments into the community. And transfer of one-time revenues into the capital improvement plan on an annual basis. So both of those which have been done as part of the CIP, but they're carried over into the 19-20 budget and implemented. And a minimum of 10% of the projected revenues from REIT will be designed as a CIP contingency fund to be used at council discretion for new projects, for increases in, or increases in projects as they move forward. So second, in terms of services, the budget, one, implements the City Council's desired budget outcomes. Two, incorporates the first 2 years of the adopted CIP. And a particular note, it requires an increase in the rates to support the needed surface water expenses. Right now, the budget simply has a plug number that looks at the expenses necessary in the CIP and surface water and simply mirrors that in terms of a revenue. And, of course, you're going to be talking later on this evening about potential rates and our support to CIP. But that's simply a placeholder in the budget in terms of the revenue that we forecasted, recognizing that it has to be supported by a rate increase. And then three, reorganizes some staff positions to support service needs. We do have the same number of staff positions as in the current biennium, and actually we expect by the first quarter of 2019 to be one less FTE in our staff positions. Some key revenue assumptions and changes include the following. One, the total budget of revenues are $58,796,945, which is an increase of just over $1 million or 2% over the previous biennium. General fund revenues are projected at $28,195,366, or an increase of 5% over the previous biennium. Property and EMS taxes totaling $172,000 due to construction sales tax. These are things that are creating that 5% increase over the previous biennium. And then moving the recreation fund into the general fund, which is a $748,000 increase, which is an offset also in recreation expenses. And an interfund loan that you discussed earlier this year for the Sweetwater Ranch project of $344,000. Some key expenditure assumptions and changes include total expenses of $58,796,945, which is the same for the revenue. And this is a 27% increase over the previous biennium, primarily related to the increase in the capital investments that you're making as part of the CIP or the first 2 years of the CIP. General fund expenses are projected at $28,181,353. That's an increase of about 3% from the previous biennium. And that includes wages and cost and benefit increases. Wages pick up the bulk of that, and then health care costs increase 4.5% in 19 and then 5% in 2020. And an increase of $515,000 as a result of your fire services as a schedule in accordance with the fire services agreement. Recreation expenses then moved into the, as we mentioned, as part of the revenues, also moved into the general fund, and that was an increase of $715,821. Budget also includes purchase of 5 vehicles out of the equipment replacement fund to replace the 5 depreciated police vehicles. These are valued at $272,000. Information and technology needs, including server infrastructure and police laptops, increased software costs, and upgrading the wireless network in both buildings, $328,000. Development feasibility study for the Remillard property in the adjacent area, $50,000. It's not only looking at tourism and recreation elements, but also looking at all sort of various land uses that could help promote economic development in those areas. New project engineer in public works with an anticipated biannual cost of $210,000, and this is going to be funded and is supported by the city's capital improvement plan. The dollars that you approved earlier on has a component of that would support this position. And a significant increase, of course, in the CIP, which we previously talked about, of just over $9 million. This is a chart, is a revenue summary, and it shows that majority of city revenues is from property tax at 56% and then sales tax at 24%. This chart illustrates an about equal amount for personnel and operations. However, if you take out fire services, which in accordance with your fire contract is part of the maintenance and operation expense, this chart would reveal personnel to be about 70% of your total general fund expenditures. Right now, it simply shows about a 50-50 split between the two. This is the general fund expense summary by department, and not surprisingly, it shows that the majority expense is public safety, at about 65% between police and fire, and the next largest expense item by department is public works at 7%. It's important that we look beyond just the first 2 years of the biennium, so that we can assure that we're offering sustainable services. And so this is a forecast that looks at the city's general fund balance or its reserve and forecast that out over the next 6 years. As illustrated on the blue line, you see that we start off the 2019-2020 biennium with a reserve of $5.7 million. That drops down to just a little over $2 million in 2023-2024. As compared against the red line that illustrates the 15% general fund reserve of total revenues. And this is a chart without any property tax increase or a property tax levy. This is that same forecast with utilizing a 1% property tax levy increase every year starting in 2019 through the next six-year period. And you can see it illustrates that the city's general fund balance and ending fund, or the fund balance, arrives at a place 6 years later that it's about the same as the city's minimum policy of 15%. In other words, you're able to sustain your 15% reserve balance over this six-year period if you were to institute a 1% property tax annually for the next 6 years. 1% property tax increase, as we identified in the budget message, would generate about $62,000 annually. That would provide $1.3 million in resources over the next 6 years to the city because of the compounding effect of those taxes. And really the benefit, the way I look at a property tax increase, if council were to consider one, it would provide the ability to provide increased levels of services back to the community. There were nearly $800,000 in expenses that outpaced the city's ability to, with its revenue situation when the budget was initially presented to me. The department directors had requested this amount of money, $800,000 more prior to the budget being balanced. And those increases are primarily the result of three positions that were requested but are not included within the budget. Those are a public works maintenance worker of $175,000, a police officer position of $262,000 for the biennium, and a deputy city clerk of $175,000 for the biennium. To the extent that there are new revenues that materialize are above what the city projects at the mid-biennium, or a new revenue source is identified and then created, such as a property tax levy, I would recommend that the council consider these positions in order listed if you had sufficient revenues. So once again, tonight is just simply an introduction for you to hear firsthand from any members of the public who have information for you regarding the budget. On November 13th, we'll take a deeper dive, and the Public Works, Executive Department, Legislative Department, and a number of the other funds listed on the screen. The 27th is where we'll pick up the remaining departments within the city, the Police Department, Communication, Marketing, Finance, and then the non-department review, and then hopefully come back to you for consideration and adoption of the budget on December 4th, and if not that date, on September 11th. And I'll conclude by simply saying I think Mill Creek has much to be proud of. You have some beautiful residential neighborhoods, an active town center, great schools, an engaged community, a talented, a dedicated professional staff, and elected leadership on the Mill Creek Council. And a personal note, I'd never imagined that I'd be returning back to Mill Creek as your city manager 15, 20 years of the community that I fell in love with and was a part of. And Mill Creek has a special place for me then as it does now, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to serve as your interim city manager, and I'm pleased to present the 2019-2020 budget for council's consideration. So I'll stop there and address any questions that council might have at this time, or ask Mayor that you invite public comment, and I can come back and address questions if there are any questions by the public.
And open up the public hearing for public comment. Okay, so we're now closed the public comment portion of the public hearing, but it will be reopened at the next public hearing.
That's correct.
Thanks. Thanks for the quick overview. I've got a couple of questions, and I guess we're going to get more into them in future weeks, but I've got a couple of questions just going through the slides that you were going through. First one, page 5, I'm thinking that there's a typo, because slide 10, second bullet, talks about 15% annual revenue, but slide 10 has it correct at 15% of the
biennial.
Yeah. I think that I'm looking through the budget itself. I think there's another place in the budget book itself that's got that same problem. I'll try to find that for you. I know it's been a source of confusion, but I want to make sure we get it right. Slide 13. I may have been asleep somewhat during our fire service contract. I know there's a lot of stuff going on, and Bob, in another capacity, you were involved in that. I didn't really have it registered in my mind that we had a $500,000 increase coming in this year, and it looks like $500,000 for this biennium. It looks like it's also projected out in the future that way, too. Could you refresh for us kind of what the cost drivers are on that? Is it population-based, or what drives that as it goes up over time? Because that's a not insignificant part of our expenses, as you noted.
If you give me a moment, I'll try to look for those numbers in the budget document.
Okay.
I can speak to that a little bit.
Go ahead, Peggy, if you want.
So I believe when we were doing the negotiation, we had for the 17-18 budget had already come up with what we had baked into the plan. And so part of the negotiation was not to go over that amount for the 17-18 budget so that we would not be out of balance. So rather than smooth this or negotiate it in a different way, we had the first biennium, the first 2 years, flat, and then it ratcheted up significantly, which is what you see here. You have a $500,000 in this biennium, and I believe it's a $500,000 in the next biennium.
And so did we negotiate for a 6-year contract now?
6-year contract, and we negotiated it flat to coincide with the budget that we had currently adopted.
18 was what
and then,
it was,
and then 15, it 16. Had an escalation.
Okay, and there's an escalation next biennium, but then we also know what it is for the third biennium.
Yeah, and
contract.
I can't remember, but
do.
That
on,
number
on page 122 of the budget, 2019 starts off at $3,930,745 and finishes up in 2022 at $4.3 million. So it does step up every year.
Then it'll be up to us to negotiate a new contract in 2020-ish. Excuse me.
That's correct. For this contract expires at the end of 2022.
Okay. So
or at some point during the year in 2022.
Okay. So anyway, the increase here is a negotiated amount for the contract. It isn't driven by some factor.
No.
Now, the initial contract year may have been driven that way, and then it's simply from the negotiations, likely the initial years of the contract were reduced for maybe heavier increases later on.
Okay, thanks. And slide 21, if you jump back to that one. So new positions in the budget, as you said, the staff had asked for these three new positions. You didn't put them in there. If we get more revenue, we might consider these, and you'd recommend that we consider them. Staff didn't just propose these for the heck of it. There was probably some task or some work or some level of service that is associated with those. Could we talk through those? Like public works maintenance worker, is this in lieu of us contracting for more help from the outside, or is this making things a little prettier than they have been, or is this kind of maintain the status quo? I'm kind of curious, what are we giving up if we don't do this?
So you're right. All these positions, there's far more need than there are resources, and so we had to balance the budget. These are positions that were proposed, and they all have merit. Public works position, just trying to keep up with the additional road miles, the landscaping that needs to be done within the city, within its right-of-ways. It's cleaning the ditches. It's just looking at all the tasks that are required to be performed by the five public works positions that are included, and trying to provide a little bit more support for those five positions. And certainly the public works director can, you know, provide you with additional information either tonight or as they talk about their budget next week with public works. Similarly with the police officer as well as with the deputy city clerk. There are reasons for all those positions, and there's need for all those positions. There simply wasn't enough revenue to support them.
Yeah, good. So in future weeks when we talk about those, I'd love to hear what we're giving up. You know, tell me what the price, you told me what the price is. You recommended we don't have the money to buy it right
yeah.
now.
So we can talk about what we're not going to be able to implement, what we're not going to be able to do because we don't have those positions.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's the three I had for right now. Thanks.
Anybody else? I had a quick question on the number of positions. It's, I think you had down here there was no increase, but one was going to be reduced by one FTE. I assume that's the HR position you were talking about.
It's a combination of them. Finance is reorganizing from three positions to two positions, two different type positions. HR has a retirement first quarter of 2019. There's been a number of position changes over the last 2 years, but when you look at the total FTE count compared to the proposed budget, from what the 17-18 budget supported, will be down one FTE.
Okay.
And some of that is also from just the, not to make it muddier, but there is also a police officer position that's not being filled within the 17-18 budget. It's supported financially within that budget. It hasn't been filled through a vacancy. That's not going to be filled in the 19-20, and instead a police service supervisor, a civilian position, will be provided for within the budget.
Got it. So when I looked at the HR position, that will be replaced. We will have someone in that capacity?
Well, it's not planned to, it's planned to go from a, right now it's 1.8 FTEs budgeted. That'll go down to one FTE within HR.
Okay. That's fine. That's all I just want to confirm that.
Well, if you could be more specific in terms of which changes, the three positions that are identified, there's been a number of positions that have changed since the 17-18 budget was adopted.
So there is some analysis of why you decided to do what you're
doing. Yes, there's analysis, there's rationale, there's support, justification for those positions, yeah.
Got a process question. Peggy and I talked the other day. There was a typo we uncovered in the document. If there are changes to the document, is there some way that we can
just written?
I'm not proposing a whole red line copy, but if you let us know what's been changed, as opposed to just a new black and white copy, so I don't have to look for what's changed. It'd be helpful to all of us, I think.
We'll do that. We'll keep note. A document this size, there's always going to be some changes. Obviously, any policy changes you make, we'll make note of. But between now and when we adopt, we'll keep a record of all those and make sure that you're aware of them as we go along.
That'd be helpful. Thank you.
We're just doing an overview right now, the big discussions at the next meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council.
Okay, next up is old business, adoption of an ordinance updating.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The Public Works Director is going to give a brief overview. You've seen this at the last study session, proposing a fee increase from $3,000 to $3,900 based on the PM peak hour trip, and I'll let the Public Works Director provide some more detail.
Thanks, Bob. Good evening, Council. So this ordinance is in congruence with what was presented at the last Council meeting. It is in congruence with the adopted TIP. And it's also per the presentation that Council received from Petit regarding the methodology that was used in order to come up with a new fee of $3,900. The current fee is $3,000, so it's an increase of $900 per PM peak. And the ordinance is attached in your package. It has received, obviously, legal review. And I'm open for any questions that Council may have. Correct.
Well, just a comment, I guess I talked to City Manager Stowe about this. Just for anybody who's looking at the packet, the first bullet on the top of the second page has the sense backwards. It says 36.5% of vehicle trips are through trips. A trip end in the city, and it's really that's local trips, which ends in the city. Is that correct?
That's correct, Councilmember Todd. So 36.5, those are local trips, so that means that those are trips that either start or end in the city of Mill Creek or both. And so the majority of the trips in the PSRC model are actually pass-through and not local.
And as you pointed out, therefore that gives us, because we're using the PSRC data, which is only state highways and 164th, then it gives us kind of a light count on some of our other traffic. A lot of our other traffic goes on other roads like Sail Hill Road and 35th and things like that.
That's correct.
One was correct, just the agenda summary was backwards. Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay, so we need a motion for ordinance number 2018-838 on ordinance of the City of Mill Creek. Program used for assessing traffic mitigation fees, adopting new traffic mitigation fee assessments, and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Thank you, Mayor. Council, remember you authorized me to issue a RFP for executive search firms for help you with the recruitment for the next city manager. I sent the RFP to 11 different firms that were known to have done executive searches in Washington State in the recent years. Seven of those firms contacted me, two of which said they were unable to respond to the RFP given their other current work, but five did respond. Five very qualified firms. I provided all of their, for transparency purposes, I provided all five of the proposals to you. I understand it was a lot of reading over the weekend, but I'm confident that one of those five will do a good job for you as you move forward in the city manager search. I looked at the criteria, based on the criteria within the RFP, I developed a scoring sheet as a way to rank those five firms. Again, you could choose any of the five, and I think they would do a very good job for you. But in terms of the manner in which they responded to the RFP, based on the criteria, I've ranked those five firms for you and then given you sort of an order of the top three based on the RFP, based on my own direct knowledge of those firms, and then based on where they have done searches at in the region. So you have that before you this evening. Whoever you choose, I'm simply looking and seeking authorization to enter into an agreement for professional services with the identified firm. I'd be glad to address any questions that council would have regarding any of those firms' proposals.
I just have a quick question on your scoring.
Yes.
You gave them all relatively moderate scores on the dependability.
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
The RFP may have been a bit optimistic or a bit heavy on wanting their references to communicate how dependable and how reliable and how capable they were in meeting the criteria that they identified within their searches. So they're just a little light. Either they were light on the way they responded, or the RFP didn't devote enough time and attention to what we really wanted to see. And so rather than sort of giving everyone a much lower score, I picked a really modest amount for all of them.
Sounds like they're all about the same responsiveness then?
They were, in regards to that, yes.
Thank you.
So not wanting to penalize any of them by deviating too much, that's why you see most of them have the same score.
Ground checks are going to do, and I understand Colin scored lower, and that's fine because it's not him, it's somebody else. But I want to make sure, because a number of these say that they're valid on the internet and the media, and that's
have a semi-finalists or when the council gets together, and that we're going to know a heck of a lot more. What we had last time, and I've done a number of these, having been on the council back in the 80s, is that, you know, the background check to help us decide who we want to interview and, you know, what the qualifications are, I think are really
Well, I would expect whoever you choose, they would do a more thorough background check than whatever you might be able to do, you know, a half hour sitting at a computer. So it's not only contacting references they provide, it's also doing more of a 360 sort of reference check of others they work with in the community. And although not included in any of the base costs associated with any of these five proposals, you may want to also consider community visits of the selected candidate to really get a more rounded picture of how others at least perceive that individual. But it certainly should be far more than the types of references that you just described, Mayor. It should be a much more thorough examination of how others perceive that individual, not only in the workplace, but also in the community in which they work and live.
I just wouldn't want to miss a good candidate because
a solid background so that when we sit here and make our decision, you know, in February or whatever, that we have enough information to make a decision. I know in Mill Creek many, many years ago is that they didn't do the background check first, and so the council picked, and then it didn't work out. The second person said, I wasn't your favorite, I don't want to work here. But we want to make sure we make the right decision the first time.
No, I agree. I mean, you have to require your search firm to do that due diligence, and there may be other due diligence that you want to perform on the selected candidate as well by site visits, for example.
Thanks. I probably wasn't listening carefully enough to Councilmember Holtzclaw's question and your answer on dependability. Could you explain again what's in that category for me?
Sure. Dependability, as it's written within the RFP, is ability and commitment to complete the work within the required time frame. They all, I think, achieve that estimate. And proposed costs as evidenced by the documentation provided through references. So it's the references part that they didn't necessarily respond to in regards to, you know, did they complete the project, you know, on time, on budget.
Okay, and so the trick was, I guess my question I'm headed towards, and there's also the column there for references. So they gave you references, you know, call so-and-so, the city clerk at this city, because they were our...
They did, and I contacted a few of them, at least for the top firms. I didn't contact all of the references. The objective of the RFP was that the references they provided should also speak to the quality of their work, and that didn't necessarily happen. I think there was only one firm, CBA or Collins, that actually had a resolution from... one of the counties or one of the municipalities they worked with in a favorable fashion. But the rest of them just simply provided references. And so,
okay, and so that makes sense, because I thought, yeah, they provided references and you didn't necessarily call all those references, so therefore that didn't close the loop on this dependability.
That's correct.
Okay.
I did make a few calls, I think two or three references for the top firms, and sort of used that as sort of information when I came up with my priority ranking.
Wasn't one of our categories necessarily, but I think it's worth talking about. And I've got a bias, I guess, that just from what I know about these firms, and it's not a bad bias, but I think, you know, Proffman has been around and has done a lot of searches for a lot of cities close to us and throughout the state of Washington. Some of these other firms are outside of the state of Washington, and I think that I'm wondering what your assessment is or your sense is about their ability to attract a pool of folks that's not just recycling the same folks around. I feel in the past, I know we've talked about Proffman last time around, like it seems like people are just bouncing from job to job to job because Proffman looks within the state of Washington. And of course it's useful to have a city manager who knows Washington laws, but I think there's also some benefit in looking other places. And so some of these other firms are coming from other places. Comments or thoughts on that? I think they are different in that category.
Yeah, it's not to say that a local firm based in Seattle could not attract someone from the other coast. In fact, that's what you'd be expecting if you chose a firm from Florida to likely try to pull someone from the other coast or maybe the local area. The issues that you generally have when you try to recruit from different regions is just culturally, is it going to be the right fit? Is the family going to be supportive of the move? And there's a lot of things that go into that sort of decision process about choosing someone who's not from the area, in addition to just sort of the laws and the practices that go on in Washington. Washington State, there are some states that have very similar practices from a legal standpoint and from a management standpoint, similar to Washington. It doesn't mean that someone couldn't quickly learn those issues and come up to speed. But generally, I find that you want to have a search firm that has done some, which is why I chose 11 that had done some work in Washington, so they had some familiarity with what it's like to live here. How much does it actually rain here when you're trying to pull someone from, you know, another region? So those are the reasons why. And although I didn't include that as specific scoring criteria, it was really sort of embedded into the quality of the responses and the approach. If they had some sort of West Coast familiarity with the talent pool, and I think there's enough talent in this state. It's just a matter of, can you find someone that exists that's already working? And many of them, all five of them, responded to their approach. It's just not about bringing those on board and for an interview process that are looking for the job. it's trying to capture those who aren't necessarily looking. They're already, you know, employed somewhere and happy, but you're trying to attract them to an opportunity here.
I don't know if my light's coming on or not.
So, I mean, just to sum, I think it's more of an advantage to find a firm that has done multiple searches in the region rather than trying to find a firm that could attract a candidate from another region.
Thank you, Mayor. Bob, you're one of our success stories as city managers from my perspective, but I don't recall how we picked you up in the 90s. How did you get here?
You performed, I don't remember who your search firm was, but you performed a national search, much like what we're proposing to do here. And I'd be guessing, but I think there were probably three or four different candidates that you brought in from a pool, and I don't know what the number was. But you did use a search firm, and you then had interviews with finalists, and I was selected as part of that process. Beyond that, I can't really remember the kind of the details.
That's enough.
Mayor
of the
Pruitt
details.
Was on the council at that time, so she may recall more of the process.
I don't remember the name, but
the reason that I ask is because my time on the council, yes, I mean, blame who you want. But if we want to blame us, then search firm's fine. I'm not real happy with some of the way this has played out for us in these search firms. And I also know that the city of Sultan, not that long ago, ended their relationship with their city manager, administrator. Lots of reasons, very public. Some firm picks him up, puts a bow on him. He gets hired in another state, and then a few months later, the truth comes out, and then he's terminated again. I don't like this, and it's hard for me to the going through headhunters, and my experience up till now has not done anything to make me feel better about it. I'm glad that we found you through that. That gives me hope. Tim Burns served, I think, almost 5 years. We found him as a public works director that we promoted, and I liked him, and I thought he did a pretty good job. He wasn't your level, from my humble opinion, but he did a good job for us. We found him without using a firm. It's hard to believe that we can't, this state as big as we are, that there wouldn't be qualified people that would just have if we could create a vehicle, or if this is the only vehicle. I mean, if it is, using a firm is the only reasonable way to go, then I'm on board and we'll just do it. But those are some of my thoughts, my concerns about it. I feel like in the past, been cumbersome, and I'm not sure we got the results we were really hoping for.
Certainly not the only vehicle. You could, I mean, the cities all the time recruit for their own positions. And you can do that in this case. The disadvantage you'd have is trying to attract a candidate who doesn't want to apply because of confidentiality issues or concern that if they applied directly to a municipality, that would then become known. And obviously, when you go through a process like this, all the candidate names are revealed at some point in time. But if you're a candidate that's happy in your job and you're doing good work and your city likes you, you don't necessarily want to upset that by throwing your hat into the ring and having it become known that you're looking when you may be one of 100. You may be able to wanting to reveal it when you're one of 5, but you're not going to want to take that chance when you're one of 100. And so in order to kind of broaden the net of the potential talent pool that may be out there that you could attract, I think it's worth the spending the $22,000 to $26,000 of expense.
I like the idea of utilizing, I guess they're called headhunter firms, right? I mean, all the top talent, which we certainly don't want to exclude, is all across the nation. So I just think if you try to just do it in-house, we potentially could certainly limit the possibilities and limit the candidate pool. And I would think that in our due diligence, though, there has to be some sort of vessel or mechanism best in the business, worst in the business. I'm sure there's some sort of notification that you can find regarding which firms are best and which have the best results and are repeatedly used. I mean, isn't that what our HR function?
Yeah, it would be great if there was a executive search firm for public entities that have that were benchmarked somehow by kind of the best in class or all those firms, and we tried to gauge that through the RFP, asking firms to really, you know, their approaches, or we wanted to know their approaches, how successful have they been in recruiting CM candidates, and how long have they remained in their current employed position? You know, not just employed somewhere, but how long have they been in the position that you recruited them for? And so in some cases we're able to get that, in others we weren't able to get that from the firms. But I really, that's really kind of the measure, I think, is the elected officials that hired those firms, have they been satisfied with the talent that has been brought to them, and have they been successful?
I guess that's kind of where I'm going. So make a phone call to the city of Bothell and say, hey, the last couple of candidates for X, Y, and Z, who'd you use? City of Edmonds, Mallington, on and on and on.
Right.
Has to be a, like I said, there's some sort of local mechanism here or some sort of group where, hey, this guy's no good, these guys are great. And I think that, you know,
and you'll get that from references. You'll get that from Bothell. You'll get that from any city that who's uses a search firm. They may give you the strengths. They may give you the weakness, but there, it's not going to be a universal sort of reference that's going to indicate that, you know, Slavin, for example, is the top candidate, or GovHR is the top candidate. It's going to be spread and mixed depending upon the results and how that particular city felt about that search. I mean, council has experience with one of these firms, and you may have mixed reactions about whether or not you felt they did well or didn't do so well. So the same thing exists, I think, with cities who use search firms. There's not any universal sort of best-in-class rating out there that you could just turn to.
Yeah, and I was just really commenting on the process of using the headhunter type.
Yeah.
I support it. I think it's an appropriate use of text.
Yes. Thanks. I apologize, but I didn't understand the question.
No, and I agree, because I know in our last round we ended up with one candidate who actually ended up withdrawing. When I was asked why, I said groveling and money was involved. But, you know, we can – I think it helps to – most of them, from what I read here, are just going to do the same old, same old. We'll post on this site. We'll post on that site, you know. Oh, I'll send out an email blast. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe good people get those all the time and won't pay attention. But we're not going to be an easy job. And I certainly want the best people, and I want solid background checks to avoid
future problems. I understand. I mean, you should expect more from your executive search firm, but they're all going to do something very similar. You know, my desire is to also assist in that process to help the recruitment, to at least be able to talk about the advantages of being a city manager in Mill Creek, the amenities that exist in this community, and help sell this position and help sell this community to the extent that it needs to do, and it's not obvious to someone, but to be able to do that at least for the candidates that exist here in this state, as well as, you know, being a resource for others who don't know as much about this state or as much about Mill Creek.
Yeah, and which, if we're lucky and find somebody in the state of the Northwest, the culture is going to be very similar.
Yes.
You know, I think when I look through all of these, I did like your feeling about understanding somebody who comes from Washington State. There's a lot of value in that has experience in, and also not just experience in context, but the experience in understanding the type of individual for these different size cities and the culture of those cities. Some of these, they're similar. When you hire an executive search firm, they go out and they, you know, they beat the bushes and they come back and they, you know, go through the throngs of candidates and give you their limited few, their top picks. One of these that I liked the best was the ones that really spent more time in the qualification area and broke the qualifications out beyond just the job qualifications of, you must have knowledge in this and this and this, but qualifications in the type of individual that will be successful in this position in this city, and the one that can do the best job for us, I think, in articulating that and discovering that and being able to go out and bring us a candidate that, you know, one, setting those pre-described qualifications, and then go out and find a candidate who fits them. Not a round peg in a square hole, but one that really fits the kinds of qualifications we're looking for. One of the early ones, it was heavy-duty East Coast, where their experience was primarily on the East Coast. Very different culture, and a very, you know, a culture that may not do very well in our community. And I think we know what we're looking for, because we've got experience on this council that has been through a number of city managers. We've got great experience from our employees and our citizens. And I think I do want to go this way. I really want to go this way. I do not want to open up the internet qualifications to us coming in directly. That would be, I'm going to get candidates coming to me saying, hey, how can you get me into that position? That's not the right route. I do believe in this. But I would like to see us pick the one that can do the finest, best job at articulating those qualifications before they ever go out and start finding the people. So I think that's going to help us get the most successful candidates. That would be when I look through them, there's some here that are a little more expensive because they spend more time in that area, other than just saying, give me a list of them and I'll go find somebody that understands this law, that law, and this law. I do like that. I think that's going to make us more successful. So my two cents on which one of these we choose, I really will look at how they will break down the qualifications of the right individual.
Have a problem with somebody being from out of state, because we don't have, in my mind, great firms here. Well, Caris would have been nice, but they were too busy and what have you. So I don't have a problem with that as long as they're going to do the job. And like Slavin, didn't they just do Bothell?
They did. I don't know that they've done anyone. Look back at their materials. I don't recall that they had any sort of regional experience. That their project manager was someone who used to live in Issaquah and is familiar with the Northwest and maybe has done some non-municipality executive searches. But I don't think they've cited a city manager.
Me again.
I think they also used GovHR too. At least they identified being.
That was the second. Was that the second one for Brad Steiner?
I don't know when. They just said the GovHR proposal identified CSRS as a client.
Yeah, that's like.
Didn't Rothman also use them as a?
They have in the past. Yes.
I think it was GovHR that just did the.
Did the Brad Steiner?
Yeah.
That one worked out. Although, in all honesty. And I was on the interview committees.
They brought one qualified candidate, really top notch.
Have to live in Bothell. And the other search didn't work out at all. So none of the top two candidates.
Make a decision tonight.
I'd like to have council make a decision this evening. You certainly could wait another week or till the next meeting. It simply will delay the start of the recruitment till that amount of time.
I'd like a chance. I probably should have done this sooner, but I'd like a chance to call some of these people and see how happy they are. If we want to vote tonight, we can. But I know some of the people that are.
I can say this, Mayor. A lot of us, and I think it's now happening to everybody now, have had laptop issues where they were locked out for the past week or so. And me on vacation at my daughter's wedding, I personally have not had a chance to review any of those. So I would just, I guess, be kind of acquiescing with the other council members in this search, which I don't not comfortable usually doing, but is what it is if we're on a time crunch. But I would prefer waiting another week.
Would that be okay with you, Bob? Can we?
That doesn't really set us back.
Only by the amount of time that it takes to make a decision. So if it's 2 weeks, it's just a two-week delay. But again, the decision is an important one, so you need to feel comfortable not on your search firm. I think that's fine if your council's more comfortable with that. And I do have some references I've completed on some of the firms, and so we can collect all references materials if you'd like, and then we can have another discussion at a future meeting.
If people have reference checks that they make themselves, like I talked to John Herring and said, how did it go for their, as part of the service board, because I happened to bump into him, and he said, yeah, it went pretty well. You know, and he and I had the common experience of using a search firm for the community transit, so we could talk. You know, we knew what we were talking about. And he said decent things about that particular firm, just as you're checking some of yours, too. I would appreciate if we could somehow pull together those references. It sounds like Bob's talked to some of them. I don't think we need to hit all the same people at the same time, but it probably is worthwhile checking, finding out how people really like the experience, because I think that's how we picked Colin Benster last time, as Landy called up. And Mount Lake Terrace said, yeah, we used them, we liked them. That's how we picked Colin last time. And that was not, I like this process better of us looking at this and deciding who we want to pick as a firm.
You know, one alternative, Mayor and Council, if you will, is to the extent that there are three members that have the time to do some work, sort of background work between now and the next meeting, maybe it's an appropriate sort of committee that could be formed to work with me and evaluate some of these firms. And then that committee then could bring a recommendation back to the council is one idea I thought.
I'd be happy to serve on a committee if that's what we want to do. Let's lose and dig into this some more. And it's hard. I went through it. It's a lot of stuff. And if I went on the amount of BS per page, some of these would not have done very well. There was some of these people. We should have given them a 10-page maximum or 10,000-word maximum or something other. Wow.
Right. Is that okay with it? We have one more person that would.
I'm the least experienced, but have the in government recruitment, but very experienced in executive recruitment. I'd be happy to offer my time because I'm local and can make myself available. But I defer that to anyone else on the council would prefer themselves.
I think we have our trio.
I'll be in contact with three of you, if not all of you, very soon. November? 13th or 17th? 13th. So, Mayor, I'll simply introduce the Public Works Director once again, who I think is going to provide a brief overview and maybe a consultant presentation.
Thanks, Bob. So, I'll have FCS come up in a few minutes, but I did want to provide some context as to what they're going to be presenting on. So FCS has worked with Peggy Lauerman, Finance Director, and myself in preparing a model that they're going to be sharing with you tonight. Thanks, Gina. The model takes into account, in simple terms, three major components, if you will, and it's a complex model, so I'm trying to simplify it as much as I can for my own articulation purposes. It takes into account assumptions, it takes into account revenues, and it takes into account expenditures. So in simplistic terms, those are the three main components. So in your agenda item F, there are lists that are bulletized that organize these different elements. So I'm going to touch on just a few of them. and FCS will go into in depth into the model and any questions that you may have after their presentation. So some of the key assumptions that I think are important are the 0% customer growth. And so this is tied to several presentations that we've had, not just because of surface water, but also traffic impact fees. So the City of Mill Creek is almost fully developed. And so looking into next year and beyond, we need to make some assumptions in this model as to how much growth is going to happen. So one of those assumptions is 0% growth. We have a few parcels that are developable, not a lot, and so the model just assumes 0% for being conservative. Another one is an operating budget minimum balance target of 120 days. And then there's also a capital minimum balance target of $500,000. There are some assumptions also made with respect to inflation, and they're all listed out in your agenda summary. So just general inflation at a 2.5. There's labor, there's benefits, and also construction inflation assumptions that have been made. So those in general are a high level of overview of the assumptions. Then as far as expenditures, we have talked during several council meetings about the large pipes and the assessments that Pertit did. Those large pipes, the pipes that are 18 inches in diameter or greater, are only 14% of the city's surface water infrastructure, so we still have a large percentage that we don't know their condition. We haven't assessed. There's been some CCTV done over the years by staff, but the CCTV has not been reviewed, it has not been assessed, it has not been prioritized. So that's still a big unknown. The model takes into account, and there's different scenarios, again, I'm not going to go into the details, FCS will, but it takes into account different alternatives, and I'll go over one of the alternatives in just a minute. So we have this concept of aging infrastructure, and we're calling it large pipes for now. And we also have two projects that are in the CIP, and they're identified as unfunded, and they're water quality treatment type projects. Now, those two projects, how they came into my radar is they have been in several past CIPs. They are not in the current year CIP. So in the 2017-2018 biennium budget, those projects were not there. However, looking at the previous CIP, they were there, and they were also in the CIP before that. That's because they were identified in a study done by the Snohomish County Conservation District. Water quality is a requirement for agencies per our NPDES permit. NPDES, I always have to look at what the acronym stands for because I don't always remember off the top of my head, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, and that permit requires water quality and quantity of wastewater treatment as well. And that leads to, in this case, North Creek or Penny Creek. Those are the two projects that were identified in the CIP. So that talks a little bit about capital expenditures. Also, you'll see it in your package and in the model that FCS will present. There are also what we're calling operational expenditures, and operationals refers to just running the business. It doesn't necessarily mean maintenance and operations. It just means running the business. And to run the business and to deliver a surface water aging infrastructure program and also to be in compliance with our NPDES permit, it needs manpower. We need people to manage these projects, and we need supervision on the NPDES permit. So in the last annual submittal per our NPDES permit to Ecology, we had Pertit support staff. A lot of the work was done by Pertit. We haven't had for at least a year, a surface water individual that can do this work. So that's one of the assumptions that is made in this model as far as an expenditure is having an FTE that can take really the lead on the NPDES permit, also that could provide the service to the public. Very often we get questions at our front desk or phone calls about, you know, in my business, my parking lot is, I'm seeing a flood or a pond. What's going on? Well, we have to go back to our plans and look at our surface water infrastructure. That all is doable. It takes time. It takes resources. Right now, we don't have a dedicated resource to that. So I can go on and on as to what that consists of. Also, we've added one-third of an asset management FTE. That can be a little confusing, like what does one-third mean? Well, when we're looking at all the data that is being collected as a result of this aging infrastructure program, and also as part of the upcoming CIP, there's a lot of data to sort through. Just the 14% of pipe information that Petite has generated takes a lot of sorting through. We don't have a GIS system or an asset management system that helps us sort through that information. And again, mind you, that's only 14% of our surface water infrastructure. So if we go ahead and proceed with the assessment of the remainder surface water infrastructure, we're talking really about an amount of data that will be extremely difficult to manage by Excel spreadsheets or plans. That is just surface water. And if you look at our CIP, one of the top priorities for next year is assessing our pavement condition index. That will be data that will also need to be sorted and managed, and we need visual management. We need a GIS system where we can use maps to geographically locate ourselves, click on a line, and know the age of the pipe, know the condition of the roadway, et cetera. So I mentioned this because that one-third could sound a little confusing. Well, it's not just an asset management that will be doing surface water. There is, in general, a need for the city to have GIS and asset management. And as we gather more information and create more programs, that becomes more important. In the model, FCS has identified three alternatives. And the first alternative, which is very common in most scenario studies, is the do-nothing alternative. And that has its own effects. Then we have alternative two. In alternative two, right now we're calling it large pipe repairs. And that's the one I wanted to take just a few minutes to clarify. Right now we're calling it large pipe repairs because all we know is the condition of the large pipes. If we were to go ahead and proceed with the assessment of the medium and small pipes, this category, alternative two, can be a blend, really a hybrid, of pipes that are in poor condition. It doesn't have to be limited to the large pipes. So I just wanted to clarify that for purposes of this presentation, you may hear this alternative being referred to as the large pipes. Well, that's because that's the information we have at this moment. It doesn't have to be limited to that. And then alternative three is all repair of all pipes. So that really talks about a very robust program that's going in parallel. So it's delivering large pipes that are in poor condition and smaller pipes that are in poor condition. Those are the three alternatives. And then FCS will go through the scenarios. There are two scenarios for each one of those alternatives. And we also have a slide that will cover a fixed or established fee and looking at what that would represent for the city. And since we're in the budget topic, I will clarify that the FTE that's requested with the surface water program is separate from the project engineer position that city manager Bob Stowe referred to earlier. And with that, I will invite John Gilarducci and Sergey Tarasov from FCF to come and present to you.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Mayor and Council. So we'll go through a little bit of brief background and then get right into summarizing the results of the work that we've done. The background is a little bit of general surface water background and background on the system. You've seen some of that before. And then we'll get into, as I mentioned, the results. So illustrated this time, you've seen these goals before. The goals of the stormwater program in the city of Mill Creek are to control stormwater runoff and erosion, prevent some of the flooding that you see here, protect water quality, rehabilitate stream corridors, and then comply with regulatory requirements. Those are the NPDES requirements that the Public Works Director was just talking about. These are illustrations again of some of the system characteristics, detention and water quality facilities, ponds, vaults, and detention. 38 of those, more than 2,900 catch basins and 50 miles of pipe like the pipe you see here. Mill Creek's rate history is a little bit unique in that there have been no increases since the utility's inception in 1999. That's to be lauded, of course, but had the rate kept up with inflation, just for your information, it would be over $10 now. You'll see rates that are higher than that tonight because of the impact of regulatory requirements and the capital construction that's needed. The effect of that has essentially been to limit to almost zero the amount of capital construction the city's been able to do. So this is an overview of the rate setting process before we get into the actual numbers that Sergey will take us through. When we've approached this rate study looking at some of the key policy issues, which you see on the left side of this graphic, fiscal policies, and Gina mentioned a couple of those. We're looking at rate structure alternatives just to make sure you're state of the industry, and you are. Stormwater rate credits, capital facilities charges. The resolution or direction that we get on those policy issues impacts what we do in the technical analysis, which is what you see in the center of that slide. The operating budget and the capital plan feed right in to that revenue requirement number, and that's our focus tonight. The revenue requirement is the amount of money that's needed from rates to meet all the financial obligations of the utility. So very important number. We look at the large pipe plan and, again, those operating costs and fiscal policies. So Gina mentioned the fiscal policies that you will see embedded in the numbers that we go through tonight, an operating reserve recommendation that is almost 3 months of operating costs, and we want that as a minimum fund balance at the end of every year. Part of that is because the utility bills with the annual property tax statement, so you get two spikes in revenue, and that's it. It's not like monthly revenue coming in, so you need some fund balance. And then a minimum balance target in the capital reserve. That debt service coverage row you see at the bottom is if the city has revenue bonds outstanding, which it does not currently, but our scenarios are forecasting the issuance of debt, then you will also need to know that rates need to be set to meet those coverage requirements. Not only do you need to recover the cost of the debt service, but a cushion over and above that, and that's what the coverage requirement is. So we're simply recommending that when there is debt, that you meet those requirements.
Hello, everyone. I'll be walking you through kind of the results of the technical analysis. And before we get into the numbers, I'll highlight some of the assumptions. And Gina did a great job kind of outlining some of the key assumptions and components that went into the study. So the forecast period we're going to be talking to you about is an 8-year period, 2019 through 2026. As Gina mentioned, we're assuming no growth. So we did validate your customer statistics information, looked at how you're currently billing your customers and how many units that you're billing, equivalent service units, and we're forecasting that in the future. Again, no growth. The baseline that forms the foundation of our forecast is the biannual 2019 and 2020 budget, and we went through that by line item, quite a bit of detail, internal staff, to make sure there's no one-time costs that are embedded, or if we're missing anything out because we've been trying to run the system a little bit leaner. So we went through that in a little bit of detail, and then we're forecasting that out in the various escalation factors that you can find in your kind of agenda summary that Gina mentioned. We currently have two debt issues that are already on the books. One is a low-interest loan, a public works trust fund loan, and the average payment on that is about $50,000, $49,500 per year. And that ranges from 2019 to 26. The debt actually matures in 2026, and it goes away after that. The second loan is an interfund loan that you recently received from the general fund to help you pay for some of the recent emergencies that you had. So that loan is being repaid over a 3-year period at approximately $172,000 per year. So it's a pretty big spike for a smaller utility, the surface water utility, and that loan gets matures in 2021. And then for our forecast, since we are running numerous scenarios and alternatives, we are assuming the use of debt to be conservative. We are using revenue bonds, and then any bonding assumptions will include a 20-year term, which is pretty standard for municipalities. Interest rate in the range of 4.5% to 5%. The closer issues will be in the 4.5% range. Further out, since we are forecasting 8 years out, will be in the 5% range. And then we are assuming an issuance cost of 1%. So in terms of actual alternatives, I'd like to think of the alternatives really as levels of service. And here, Gina did a great job of describing what they are. There's three levels of services. Baseline means we're not really maintaining our infrastructure. We're just trying to keep a business as usual. One caveat here is that we're not really accounting for any maintenance, emergencies that might occur operationally. So this is kind of, if everything holds today, just covering our operating budget as well as existing debt service, can we do that with our current rates today? So that's just to answer that question. The second option is either light or large pipes, because that's really the only known cost that we have right now, the 14% of total pipes. Alternatively, that can be considered as interchanging once you do receive the information from smaller pipes. Basically outlines how much money we can spend per year, and that's about $750,000 per year, as we'll see on the next slide. This option does include the water quality watershed basin projects included. And as discussed previously, includes one additional staff, one additional engineer, and a third of a position allocated to the surface water utility to assist with asset management. And then final alternative, again, is in parallel working on all pipe repairs, including large and small. So in this slide, when we bring everything together, we take the baseline information, expenses, revenues, and forecast it out in the future, we have the key components. So these are showing the ranges from 2019 through 2026. So here, you'll see that rate revenue, doesn't matter on alternative, under current rates, without any rate adjustments, is $720,000 because we're not forecasting any growth. Our operating expenses are about $690,000 to $816,000 under current baseline conditions. Once we add the FTE assumption, they go up to about $1 million, but that's all the way out in 2026.
And what's the advantages to forecasting new debt 6 years out?
Just to let us know so we don't fall off the cliff. If we have a large need coming up or a lot of projects coming up, if we're not planning for it, you might have no increases, and then a spike in rate increases because coverage comes into effect, especially with revenue bonds. So it just gives us ability to smooth the rate impacts over time instead of doing nothing potentially and having a substantial spike when we come up to that year. So here we also have existing debt, as we mentioned. You'll see that it's front-loaded because we do have that general fund loan that we need to repay back in the next 3 years. So it does drop back down to the public works loan, the $50,000. Again, that's consistent in all alternatives. And then the debt scenario is tied to the capital plan that we have. Right now, alternative two includes $7.9 million of capital inflated to the year of construction. Alternative three has it almost doubled to $14 million. Now, the new debt that you're seeing is the higher end of the alternatives. So each alternative two and three, actually has scenarios. And so one scenario, and we'll get into that in a couple of slides, looks at trying to levelize the rate increase as much as possible, but that requires use of debt. And then the second alternative looks at, okay, how can we cash fund more, tries to minimize the use of debt, which we'll share the results of that one as well. So we actually do have multiple options.
So both two and three are worst case expenses are used in your analysis, correct?
The debt portion of it is the highest.
Okay. If we're going to spend $1 million next year, mm-hmm. So is that under 2A, 3A, is that included in that?
The current capital budget is included.
Okay, so that's our class debt failure.
That's correct.
The plan, okay.
That's correct.
Two-A. Two-A is the one.
That's correct. So we're estimating the cost, and right now we're aligning that kind of through internal discussion with the staff at equivalent level as the current replacement schedule for the large pipes. So we're setting it at least at the same amount.
Okay, but we have no idea.
At this point, we don't have enough information from Petit with actual cost assessments. So again,
smaller
They have not been scoped. So in the past, since 2012, staff has been doing CCTV. So we have videos of some of those. Those videos have not been reviewed or prioritized. Where we are right now is I've requested Pertit to prepare a scope fee schedule as to what it would take to review the remainder of the pipe, so 86% of our infrastructure. So they're working on that. Scoped? See, that's part of what they're assessing in providing me a fee. Yeah.
Some pipes less than 18 inches have been
CCTV. Correct. Correct. So since 2012, staff has been CCTVing type pipes of all sizes. So with the Pertit work, we looked at all of the large pipes. So all that CCTV that was done in the past was used to prioritize, and that's how we came up with the F, the C's, and the A's. And with this phase two, if you will, we would be looking at the remainder of the pipes. We'll be using the CCTV that has been done in the past, and then there's a delta. There's some pipe inspection, CCTV, that has not been conducted. So Pertit is working on a scope and fee and schedule for me to close the delta and then to tell the city, basically tell us or inform us as to how much it would cost to review what has already been recorded.
Sorry. Are we able to fund the new public works employee that we're potentially looking at, or there was a shortfall with this fund also?
No, that would be a maintenance position, and so it would only be funded if the maintenance position was performing surface water tasks.
So, like, if we said 0.3, like we keep giving employees, they're doing a 0.9, a 0.8, a 0.3. So, I mean, so I guess technically or legally you can. Is that what you're saying?
If they're performing legitimate surface water work, then certainly you can spread a salary across many different funds, and surface water being one of them.
Okay. On this slide, you'll find kind of a high-level summary of the capital plan that's included in each alternative. You'll see the upper chart includes inflated dollars, and the lighter green color or gray color represents a summary of alternative two. And then you can see basically alternative three, as we talked about, is pretty much almost double of alternative two in the darker bars. So again, just a visual comparison there. And then on the bottom chart, you'll see the actual projects. These are actually in today's dollars just to keep them level and consistent. You'll see the large stormwater pipe projects, 18 inches or greater. The first year, as you mentioned, was that $937,000 that's included, and then every year thereafter, it's assumed that $750,000 plus inflation through the eight-year forecast period. We are including those two projects that are currently spread between the three-year period of 2020 through 2022, including Lower Mill Creek Road Basin and 164th Street Southeast East Basin. That's at about $250,000 and $500,000, relatively speaking, by project. And then finally, the smaller pipe projects, we're making estimates and assumptions. Right now, we're assuming design could start, if we were to go with that direction, in 2019 at about $120,000. And after that, it would go in parallel at about $750,000 per year. Again, that's the upper bounds scenario or alternative. So putting everything together, on this slide you'll find the summary of the revenue requirement. Here the bars represent expenses made up of the darker gray in the bottom of the operating budget expenses, followed by an orange representing debt service. As you can see, that those 3 years for that interfund loan falls off in year four in 2022 and leaves off only the public works loan. And finally, we have some additional reserve funding or rebuilding our reserves through the gray, as well as putting money aside if potentially we did decide to do some capital. So there's some room after the debt falls off that would generate some additional cash. So it looks like, basically, if we're looking at the revenue at current rates, which is represented through the solid black line, it looks like we're barely covering our operating budget through just current level of revenues. And we're probably not even covering the full $50,000 for public works loan. So when we had that emergency and had to borrow that loan from a general fund, it does not look like we can have enough funds to repay it over the next 3 year period without adjusting our current rates. So to even do that, not taking any account of additional capital that's necessary, we need to raise our rates And the current proposal for the baseline-only scenario would raise the rate on an annual basis, since you do assess fees on an annual basis, from $78 to $99. And on this slide, we provided the comparison both in annual terms as well as monthly terms. So the monthly term, it would go from $6.50 to $8.29, and then a quarter or 25 cents per year the next couple of years just to catch up over a spread period of time. So again, what this really tells us is that your revenues are currently rates are not sufficient to repay the loan as well as keep up with expenses, and that's not even layering on top of the capital program. Okay. When we layer on top of the capital program, and again, the summary here represents kind of the higher end version of the borrowing scenario. We're going to talk about the alternative scenarios on the next slide. Here you can see that new color that's appearing here. Is that green, that represents additional debt. And in that smooth scenario where we're trying to levelize our rate increases as much as possible, you can see that debt becomes a substantial portion of overall expenses once we get out to 2026. So that brings us to kind of the summary of the two options how to fund this alternative. So in this case, you'll see the table down below representing the gradual increase, which utilizes more debt as 2A, and the upfront increase as 2B. Now, the logic we had for 2B was to basically bring our rates up on par to help us fund the program over the next eight-year period, but also maintain kind of an inflationary increase per year. So instead of having one spike and do nothing, we wanted to avoid kind of a what we have done in the past, where we had a rate foundation of the rates in 1999, and then we've done nothing for 20 years. So here, we're just simply assuming we're going to keep up with inflation after the initial adjustment. So the first scenario, you'll notice in both scenarios, we can't avoid debt. We just don't have enough funds currently in the books to generate a large enough rate increase, not that we would even recommend one, to offset the immediate cost. So both options will have some level of debt. So in this case, it would be about $1.6 million at the lowest end that we would need to issue, most likely in 2019, which would generate approximately $135,000 per year new annual payment. Alternatively, if you wanted to levelize your increases as low as possible, with the caveat that we do have those front-end increases that you saw in the baseline option, so it's not quite as smooth and level type of stepping of increases, we generated 2A, which does spread the adjustments over time. What that doesn't allow you to do is accumulate enough cash. So the higher the increase up front, the more time we have to accumulate cash and pay for projects. If we don't do that, we need to borrow money, and so now we have to delegate some of our annual revenue to pay for debt service. Therefore, we don't have enough money to put away for new projects. That's why you're seeing more debt. So here on the upper range, it's $6.8 million over four issues, so it's not all in one go. It's over that eight-year period. Pretty much every other year would be assessment of new debt, and it would range from $152,000 per year to about almost $600,000 per year in debt. So what would that do to your rates? In this case, the first adjustment for the gradual approach is approximately $39 annually, or $3.25 monthly, up to $117, or $9.75. If you look back at the scenario that showed your historical rate, with inflation, it's over $10, about $10.06. Here, the first step of this adjustment keeps you below that historical average, just to keep the increases gradual. And you'll notice if you look all the way out in the future, by 2026, again, very far out there, the fee would be with the debt in there at $194 per year or $16 per month. Once we get to our comparison of our neighboring utilities, some of the utilities, or actually average utilities, are already at $16. The upper ends are around $20. So the average utility is already at $16. With this option, we wouldn't get to $16 per month until 2026. So it's still, as we'll see, below what other utilities are today. And they'll be most likely, almost certainly, will be going up by 2026 as well. The alternative option, where you do raise your rates up front significantly more just to keep up with inflation thereafter, would increase you pretty much to that $190 level year one to $16 per month, and then more inflationary, keeping up with costs after that. It would eliminate the need of debt service altogether after the first one for that eight-year period. So I know it's a lot of numbers. I want to pause for a second. Do you have any questions?
Well, again, we're only looking at all two here, so this is just taking care of the large pipe issue.
That's correct. That's correct. And again, you can think of it.
Oh. Wow.
Right. You can think of it, once you do have the information for the small pipes, you can just spread the timing of the repairs and do 1 year large pipes. So this is can be considered that in the naming large pipes, are really it's more of the level of how much capital we can do per year. So this is alternative three. And again, this is summarizing the debt option. Here you can see it's basically substantially larger. You can almost see that debt funding becomes bigger than our operating budget by the end of the time period. So with the highest scenario in 2026, again, with that 3A, we would need $12.6 million. So our debt service with revenue bonds will be greater than our forecasted operating budget in that time period. So really focusing on the dollar impacts, we go from $78 with a gradual option up to $124, which is about a $10 on a monthly basis. So again, right around there where we cover with inflation, if we would have been increasing our rates with inflation. If we look all the way out in the future, we would be at about $21.94 by 26. There are a couple of utilities out there right now in the $20 range already. So even under the kind of the biggest case scenario, you're still below some of the utilities that are already there. So it gives you a little bit of a comparison. If we go up front all the way, all in one go, that basically that $21 will be in year one. And then after that, it would be inflationary adjustments there. So again, if we wanted to, basically the comparison here is that we want to eliminate the debt and use cash, it requires significant front-end rate adjustments so we can just have enough time to accumulate the cash to pay for those projects, or do we try to spread it out with debt? And then to make it a little easier to compare, we put it all together because it's kind of each slide was a little bit ago. So what you're seeing, looking at here is the three alternatives. Two and three have two scenarios each. The annual numbers are at the top, and the monthly numbers are on the bottom.
So a lot to absorb. Excuse me. We're going to show you now a couple of matrices that bring together the same information, but try to give you maybe a different view of what we see the options being. Again, the same information. So the first one, we talked about the gradual increases as scenarios, bringing in a lot more debt in order to smooth the rate increases. So we took those two gradual increase scenarios and put them in this matrix for both alternative two and alternative three. And what we're trying to show here, and we'll start with alternative one, that row, which we're calling the baseline. Again, that's status quo operations. We show you the rate for a single family customer, or the per ESU rate, the current rate of 650 going up to 829 and then 879, allowing you to fund ongoing operations and no capital. We've talked about that ad nauseum. Alternative 2A, this is the large pipe repairs, again, incorporating lots of debt. You see how that impacts the rate in 2019 by adding $1.46 per month. So the monthly rate equivalent would be $9.75. By the end of the period, the rate has had to go up $7.40 to a monthly rate of $16.19. That gets you current operations plus the additional 1.1 and a third FTEs, and the large pipe repairs with the accompanying debt and the watershed basin projects, as we've talked about, those can be reprioritized as you learn more about the small pipe needs. And then alternative 3A, you see those rate results, again, estimating the cost of the small pipe repairs. But immediately in 2019, the rate would have to go up an additional 65 cents from the alternative 2 number to 1040 a month, and an additional 575 by the end of the period, in addition to the alternative two numbers, to almost $22 a month in 2026. But that also gets you, again, the estimate of the smaller pipe repairs. So, again, that's assuming you'd like the more gradual increases over time. The second matrix shows what I would call front-loaded, you know, the upfront larger increase and then inflationary after that. And you see much higher needs in 2019 for 2A, almost $8 a month, and then an additional almost $6 a month for 3B, excuse me, I said 2A, 2B, and 3B in 2019, and then an additional almost $11, 2B in 2026, and by the end of the period for the most expensive scenario, an additional $7.27 on top of that for a monthly rate of $27.02 to do everything with the front-loaded increase and inflation after that. So really, the matrices are all about different patterns of increases to get to the same place with the alternatives 2 and 3.
We know the facts. It is what it is.
Right.
We've seen the footage. We know we're going to get from there. So that's a drink. The one that you know, I'm thinking about it, we don't really know enough about the small farm market to justify asking for an increase.
And you probably have looked at this analysis, but if we went at a non-gradual approach to alternative 2 and then reserve debt for alternative 3, if we, depending on what we find out as we get further down the road. Because debt is something that
sure.
We may or may not incur, but the cash reserves taking the bite and the bullet right now for alternative 2. I mean, we can tell the public this is the situation of the pipes. They've got to be repaired. And if we choose not to do this, the cost will only be higher, much higher. So there's really no reason not to do it. Do we want to incur the debt on that? But maybe reserve the debt and the option of the debt to reduce the impact of alternative 3.
You could absolutely do that. Yeah, there's still a smaller amount of debt associated with alternative 2, but that front-loaded increase would set you up, and then you
right.
could use
a
more gradual
more.
Approach.
And we'll know more mm-hmm. as to what kind of debt we need to do.
That's right. It will. So the gradual increases assume debt over a period of years. I think it's four separate issues.
Yeah.
Right. The upfront major increase just has one initial debt issue, and then it's cash funding and inflationary increases after that. So there is just the one upfront issue, but it's a much more modest amount than in scenario 2. Alternative 2, excuse me.
There's also several reasons why we're assuming multiple issues. One is that due to arbitrage laws with revenue bonds, you have to spend the money within 3 years. So we can't keep keep more than you need to do in the next 3 years. And two, it's more shaping. So if we assumed shaping of the annual debt, if we assume $10 million are up front, you need to meet a requirement of a payment on $10 million all up front. Well, our rates are pretty low, and we need to build them up gradually, typically, to support it, unless we want to have a large a rate adjustment right away.
So we were requested to also model a scenario which looked at doubling the rate in 2019 and then following the pattern similar to what the city has done historically, then leaving it at that level. So the straight black line you see would be rates at that new level. The issue here isn't the expenditures. The expenditures follow the same pattern as alternative 2, which you've seen before. The issue is you run out of money, and that's what we're showing, that the area portion of this graph, which is, I guess that's yellow, falls below zero between 2023 and 2024. So that's that you're able to meet initial expenditures and then run out of money and go below zero.
Right, and under that scenario, what's important to note is that once the city does go up to revenue bonds, secures revenue bonds to actually pay for projects, coverage becomes an issue, and if you do nothing, absolutely nothing, you actually potential in default of those coverage requirements, which is a significant hit on the city's ratings. So it would almost be would not be an option to do nothing eventually once you get to that low limit of coverage.
Yeah. We do try to I guess, gently advocate that, that folks think about in, at least an inflationary increase after that one adjustment to keep, just to keep pace with regular cost increases. But that's, of course, your choice.
You guys have done a great job of articulating the need and actually just showing exactly where it's going to go, how it's going to go. Thanks for that. It opened my eyes, you know, so I'm on board. I support what you have to do here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Oh, we're very close. We're very close. So we did want to show you the rate survey. Yeah, because this can be of some comfort anyway to know what's going on around the region. I think we've showed you this one before, but we've added in the different alternatives for the city, and you can see about a third of the way up, alternative 3A, and these are all the 2019 rates at 1040. Alternative 2B, a little over halfway up from the bottom there at 1606, and then 3B, which you remember was the most expensive upfront increase scenario up there at a little over, or almost $22 a month in 2019. So the one thing this doesn't show is what all of these folks will be doing in 2019 and beyond. Many of their rates will be going up as well. So this is an ever-changing chart, and it's apples and oranges too. So next steps, we're hoping to get some feedback from you if there is any on a preferred approach. The staff recommendation is alternative 2, and then we will go and finalize our numbers based on that input. Rates could be adopted effective in January. Under this schedule, we will then follow with an evaluation of rate credits and capital facilities charges into 2019.
This is very helpful. Could you put up page 5 of your slides? And I'm not sure if this question is really directed to you guys as opposed to Gina. It would be helpful for me and I think to others. We talk about the city system, and I want to make sure I understand what it is and what it is not. So I work for a development company. So when we go and develop a piece of land, we take an acre, we've got to account for all the surface water that comes onto that property before development. We've got to design a system. We pay civil engineers a ton of money to design a system to capture the water through rift drains, through catch basins. They convey it in the pipes that we're talking about, which are in the public right-of-way, and they convey it typically, unless you're using LID, to a detention facility where it gets treated and eventually gets discharged. As I understand it, the pipes, I live in Brighton, the pipes in the public right-of-way, those are dedicated to the public. The city's responsible for those, correct?
Yes.
But the detention facilities, where the water goes for treatment and detention, those are private. As Gina knows, our HOA is having an issue with the lack of our HOA's failure to maintain that over the years. So we're paying the piper and trying to figure out a way to deal with that. I assume that that's the way that the entire city is. That, in other words, we heard some comments today about city water and developments in the MCCA. I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're no different than, for instance, Brighton. When they were developed at some point, the developer had to come in with a civil engineering plan to show how they're capturing the stormwater, conveying it through pipes to a detention facility where it gets treated and detained and eventually released. So there's nothing unique about MCAA developments and non-MCA developments. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so when we're talking, I just want to make sure I understand this. So when we talk about 38 different detention and water quality facilities, can you describe what those are? Am I correct that those are mainly, for instance, for roads? Where are those 38? So using my neighborhood as an example again, when you're inside the boundaries of Brighton, our stormwater system was designed to capture the water within the four corners of that piece of property. What about 148th? Where does the storm water from 148th in front of Mill Creek Elementary go? Would that flow into one of these 38 facilities?
It may. So 38
I can't tell you right now. I will have to look into it as to whether they're all within the responsibility of the city of Mill Creek or if some of them are within HOA. If I had to guess, I would say it's a combination of both because that number is pretty large.
Okay, but of that 38, those aren't any, the city doesn't maintain any detention facilities for any private development or any neighborhood in the city.
That's my understanding. I can't unequivocally say for any because I haven't looked at all of them. But my understanding is that that's the general rule of thumb. So the HOA is responsible for their own detention facility, and then there are some that fall under the city's responsibility, like Pond 6.
Right, but that's not a residential development. It's not like
that's correct,
Brighton or
yeah.
another community. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that's helpful. I'm just so if there is one of those 38 is for a residential development, that would be the exception, not the rule.
Correct, yeah.
And so when we're talking about 2,900 catch basins, those are either within roads outside of developments or the roads within developments.
Yes. However, those are catch basins that we're responsible for cleaning.
Right, understood. And so the 50 miles of pipes, that's what we're talking about in terms of either in roads inside developments or outside developments.
Correct, and we're responsible for those pipes.
So that's what we're talking about, whether it's in, I think I saw Brighton on our schedule for a few years down the road needing to be looked at, and right now we're dealing with Springtree. But there is really no, I mean, there's the way the stormwater system is designed for residential developments in the city is no different inside the MCCA as opposed to outside the MCCA.
That's correct.
Thanks, Mayor. I definitely support what you're doing, and I apologize if I seemed like I was cutting you off before. That wasn't my intent. I think for kind of some public consumption here, to let folks know that what these folks do, Petite, they are just kind of the, we've commissioned them to give us an idea of what's coming in the future, and we all know by the failures we've seen lately what's coming in the future. I absolutely support this. I think doing nothing is absolutely does nothing. I like that we can support staffing from that fund as well. I think that's another plus that is certainly helpful in making my decision. And I definitely support the, what is it, the 2A that we have on the schedule here.
But 2A would be the higher debt, and then 2B would be the higher up front.
My, I'm curious, between 2A and 2B, just make sure I understand them correctly. So on 2A, we're looking at a gradual increase with utilization of debt. 2B, we don't utilize the debt. We do take a more significant upfront increase, correct?
Right. To me, I think that seems to make more sense to sell that to
because what I'm worried about is there is an ugly old alternative 3 out there that somebody we're going to have to face it someday. If we could support the repairs on our large pipes, if we could do it without the debt, and if that means that we're going to have to take, instead of going from $6 a month to $7 to $7.20 to $7.40, that's going to be done with doing nothing. Take the hit. We've gone since 1999 without an increase. People are going to understand that we are behind the eight ball. We have these repairs now. We have not been doing them for the last 10 years. If we had, we'd have a bigger fee, but we wouldn't be asking for a fee increase now because we would have thought about it before. We just waited until they all, now we have to start repairing them. And so the citizens, you know, we haven't been asking money from them. I think it would be, I think it would be a stronger sell to take an upfront increase, you know, the $19, you know, a month right up front, then go to a gradual cost, you know, inflationary number, so that we do have the alternative of debt for alternative 3. We have the, if we have to go to 3 and we do need to get the small ones done, rather than coming back again to our citizens and asking for another major increase, we're going to incorporate debt into it to utilize, you know, to pay for those costs. I think the scariest one you showed me was the slide where servicing the debt
is more than the operating budget. I mean, that's fraught with disaster from a finance standpoint.
I just want to thank you guys for this study. This is exactly what I was looking for. It was a lot to digest when I first read it. I know we need to do something. I'm not prepared to have a discussion tonight of which one of these I want to go with, but now having heard this, I can go back and look at it a second time and have a better understanding of it. But there's no question we need to do something, but it's going to be an interesting discussion in a few weeks of what we decide to do. So thank you for all the work on the rate study. This is what I was hoping that we would be getting.
That's correct. The schedules and the planning calendar is their current schedule for adoption of the surface water fee.
Thank you. Just to clarify Councilmember Steckler's comments, Jubilee does have some debt. It's just a smaller amount of debt. Yeah, smaller amount. Comment over it's front end. Less painful to talk about monthly rates, but everybody pays annually, and so the monthly number is really not it. We should be talking about the annual number and be thinking about the impact of that. I think a lot of this is the psychology of how we sell this. And yes, we have not done anything for a long time. It's negligent. We had more infrastructure because it early started getting built around here in 1973, 4, 5, 6. And so it isn't like we've put this off forever, but we have now found ourselves, oh, we're now at the point where it's time to do something different. So here we are. But I think we should be talking about annual rates. The trick is people don't know what surface water costs. They know what they've been billed. They've been billed $78 a year forever, since 1999. They have no idea that people just across the street in Snohomish County or over in Linwood or in Snoqualmie are paying a lot more. And so there's going to be a certain amount of education for people to recognize that it's, you know, we're way behind. That rate chart is interesting, and it's useful, I think, to make people realize that, again, we've been fortunate that we haven't had to charge so much. I've got a question for any of these numbers. One of the things we talked about doing, or Gina talked about us doing, is getting an FTE, and so we can get going on the modern system of GIS instead of our Excel spreadsheets and drawings. I've been after this for several years. We've got to get a place where our data is in good situation. The longer we wait to do GIS, the more money we're throwing down a rat hole. When did that FTE come in to these calculations? Is that starting right off the bat, or is that out a ways?
I believe, I'll have to double check, is 19.
19. Okay, so next year. Is that the plan, Gina, is to get going on?
Check. I thought it was after that.
You can double check.
It's in one of the slides.
I don't see presentation here. I think it's really important we get going on that. We're collecting data, and we're just sticking it in file drawers. That is just silly. Or we took all those CCTV tapes and just put them in a drawer. I mean, we did half the job. It's time for us to really start collecting our data. And I think a lot of the problems we're going to have more problems by not knowing where things are. So I'm more in favor of us doing that sooner rather than later.
So, Councilmember Todd, to answer your question, it's on the second page of the agenda summary, and it assumes adding the one-third of an asset management FTE beginning in 2020.
Does that require also selling? Well, it requires the other two-thirds of a person to be in the general fund, which that is not in, going back to the previous presentation, that is not in the general fund budget presented for the 19-20 biennium?
That's correct.
That's an impossibility the way we've got it right now. So when we get back to that, I'm going to make a pitch for either we do a GIS completely or we make those things line up. I think we need to do GIS completely. We were able to borrow money from our general fund the other day or the other month. Because we went bankrupt, basically. Our company ran out of money, and Peggy borrowed some money from herself. Good job. Nice, on good rates. Is that to make this whole thing work? Because this plan doesn't show us rebuilding working capital for several years. And so we are not able to make our monthly commitments because, as they pointed out, our our revenue comes in spiky, it comes in twice a year, but we still have to pay for the people and the materials and equipment they use throughout the year to the tune of $720,000 a year, right?
Right. If you recall, we contributed the $500,000 so that it would give us enough liquidity to get going on some of these studies by Pertit to get the pipes looked at. We will get a payment in February. The intent is, while these take effect January, we would incorporate those into our billing for Snohomish County by the end of the month so that we could see some money and some increase, you know, in February. But it would only be one-fourth of the rate increase that we would receive.
Well, we would see, won't people get booked for that until their April taxes, which
That's
we don't
right.
get until
That's
June
right.
or something, right?
Yeah, the February bill, you're absolutely right. The February bill actually lags from the previous period. So it won't be until May.
You pay for working capital. I think you're running out of cash.
But I may run out of cash, and if I have to, I will. I don't, you know, I've got some requirements as to, you know, how much I can borrow and what the term is. So we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it.
I just, you know, I'm different too. I think we all need to think about this between the 2A and the 2B. But the bigger step to begin with, as much as I hate to do it, I think we need to cover the working capital shortage that Peggy's got as well. We've already got in here, we're retiring, we've already borrowed, but I think there's another, she's short some more money. She needs some money to be able to pay bills, and so I have a feeling we should figure that out too, and maybe that's part of the initial step. I hate the idea of another step, but it's, we got to face reality. We're out of money. We can't run our business.
You're right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. I was looking at some of these stormwater rates of other cities, and it appeared that they had their utility fee, and then they also, cities with a utility tax their fee, the stormwater utility as well, with their utility tax?
Some of them do, yes.
Kirkland does. So it goes, their fee is like $200, and then they get another $20 on their utility tax, which is, wow. Okay, so just want to make sure. Thank you. There was been said, well, your fee, you know, you didn't raise your fees. Your fee's the same as it's been for a few years. It sounds like you could infer that there was a lack of diligence or awareness or just bad leadership. And I would say that that's not fair and it's not true. What we've been looking at the stormwater needs every year we do this stuff. All the way back to 03 when I was given the chance to come in here. At the time, there wasn't the challenges that we're facing now. So there was no argument to say we need to raise these and pay for things. Now we had the catastrophic failure at Sweetwater Ranch, and we've got all these busted pipes that we want to fix. And so that's what's changed. Had those issues been had we been aware of those issues in 07, 08, 09, we would have raised our rates. Of course we would have. That would have been reasonable. And in hindsight, I wish we had been aware of them so that we could have been a little more gradual and not hit the taxpayer with such a big hit like this. So I just think the, from my perspective, selfishly serving my own needs here, interests, I thought we were doing the right thing with the information we had. And I stand by our decisions then, and now we've got to face the world we're in and make different changes and new decisions.
I'm curious. Bob, it's been a few years, but Bothell's another one of those. Bothell and Woodinville both have low rates. Do you happen to have any insight on, are they doing the same kind of thing we are, or do you have any idea? Because those are also suspiciously low.
Right. They also have a capital facility charge in their downtown, which is significant. They do have utility tax, as Councilmember Bond had pointed out. So it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison when you look at Bothell, as well as maybe some of the other jurisdictions on that chart.
The significant growth has really helped in Bothell generate revenue from capital facilities charges, like you said.
And so that money has been, they've been using that for stormwater capital
yes.
needs, just like we have over the years. We've taken extra money and put it into our stormwater projects in the past ourselves.
That's correct, and particularly in the downtown where development would have maybe have built their own detention facilities that has gone and it contributed to capital facilities charge for a regional system, which otherwise would have had to have been paid for by fees. In this case, it's partially paid for by fees, but a significant piece of it is paid by the development community up front.
Anybody has any more questions or thoughts, please let me know. We're on reports. Mayor Nunn. Mark?
I have a couple things I wanted to bring to light. Just some good news. Since the last time we met, I think I told you that we had three great events that happened in our city, and I just wanted to take a minute to reflect on those. One was Halloween. I have to say, for the first time, with having no children at home, I decided to come down and see what's been going on down here at the city. I've never been down here for Halloween night. I was absolutely shocked at what I saw. I saw a downtown core that was absolutely flooded with citizens and their families, something I never expected. I thought it was absolutely incredible. Kudos to the city employees, too, for their support. The Trunk or Treat event at City Hall North exceeded my expectations as well. I mean, a strong community is built on a community coming together, and this is just a phenomenal event. Now I know why I've been eating all those chocolate bars every year for the last 10 years. There's no kids in my neighborhood anymore. They're all down here in a much safer, more communal environment. So kudos to that. Also, we had two great events that happened just recently with we were talking about this with the city public works. Had some work to be done for the veterans park for the upcoming veterans parade and ceremony that we're having, and they needed some help, and it was a matter of we didn't have the staffing issues, but we were able to our local communities came together, Jackson High School students and Mill Creek Kiwanis, over 25 people re-landscaped that park for the veterans ceremony, and the city provided all the equipment and an absolute ton of bark for all those people to spread, and it was really a great event. It was a great event to be seen. That's a great way of the community coming together. And I also want to thank the city of Mill Creek and the business community and the Kiwanians for the shredding event that we did. Another great example of the city, a business, and a community coming together to provide a service to our citizens. It was three great events that just recently happened. I figure we need to kind of celebrate some of these good things that are going on, and some really good things are happening in our city. So kudos to the groups that helped to put all that together. I'm done.
No report, Mayor.
Quick question for Gina. You don't need to answer this now, but with the repaving the state did on 132nd and 128th, are they going to put any reflective markings on the road? And the reason I ask is I had an event at Sean O'Donnell's a week and a half ago on a Saturday night when we had that massive rainstorm. And driving on that road at 7 o'clock at night, a driving rainstorm, I didn't know where the heck I was on that road. There was no markings whatsoever to tell me if I was in a lane or not. And this is a recurring problem on this with the state, because I know they did the same thing on Stevens Pass, and it took them 6 months when they repaved that area up by Skykomish to finally put some reflective markings on there. But it just struck me that in a rainstorm at night, that is a very dangerous place to drive. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Just real quickly, Mayor, in addition to the planning calendar, if you could let me or Gina know if you're able to attend the Veterans Day ceremony and parade, if you could RSVP to one of us by Thursday, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Name, address,
in
3 minutes.
All right. Greg Chandra, 4310 135th Place Southeast, Mill Creek. And I'm attending because preliminary agenda in the Mill Creek View, we saw that there's the East Gateway Urban Village where we live by. Instead of development of another downtown core kind of environment, we haven't seen much economic development. And we saw hey, there's low-income housing being proposed. So that's one of the reasons we came out here, to say we have a lot of residences that have been built, which is good. The senior centers, I think, useful. We've had, you know, apartments go up. We've had, townhomes go up. And we've had a pretty nice park up there, but we haven't seen any economic revitalization or any development going on. While we see in downtown a lot of activity going on with the sports complex and other activities. So seeing that, instead of trying to get that happening within Mill Creek, we're looking at having this other development happening more residential, wanted to come in here and say, let's try to prioritize some more growth there.
That's crazy.